I can't recall the last time the girls lost two matches in a row, but it doesn't matter, my friends. This is about positivity. This is about optimism. This is about perspective and maybe some constructive criticism. Stick around. What is going on, my friends? And welcome, welcome, welcome to yet another episode, a much needed episode of That Arsenal Women Podcast with me, your host, Demian. If you are a first-time listener, thank you so much. And I want you to know that not only are you very welcome, but I need you to know what you just signed up for listening. I am a professional musician here in the city of LA who has a massive passion for the good old Arsenal Women Football Club. And my opinions are just that, opinions. They are based on vibes. They're based on biased, you know, feelings. And I am not a professional footballer. I am not a professional pundit. I am not a journalist. I am not an author, even though I have a blog, thatarsenalwomenblog.com, in which I write every single day, every single day. My point is that if you are looking for match analysis and in-depth tactics and stuff like that, this is not the podcast for you. I try to speak from a place of honesty, and I try to be as authentic as I can. I don't have the best of memories. I am very passionate. I'm biased with certain players and so on and so forth. So you might have been used to this if you listen in the past. And if you are, again, a new listener, this might be something different. But that is what I'm here to do today. So what am I going to be yapping about on this week's episode? Not only are we going to speak about that annoying loss against Man City, but I'm going to draw a lot of positives. I'm also going to speak about the match against the Lionesses coming up and how that Conti Cup gave us a favorable draw, to be completely honest with you. I want to talk about Jonas and, of course, the main topic of today, which is we're still in it. We're still in the WSL race. Do not let anybody tell you anything different. Actually, I kind of take it back because I kind of broke one of my cardinal rules of advice giving. And as a professional musician and an educator, a lot of the times that I do my lessons, we end up talking about advice, mentorship, and things that are sort of outside of the scope of musical ability and technique and music theory and musical concepts, right? So it's a lot of mental things. It's a lot of perspective. It's a lot of, you know, anecdotes and situations and so on and so forth. And I've always had a beef with this saying and in this advice that people give, that don't let people tell you this, or don't let people, you know, tell you you can't do anything, or don't let them say this, or don't let them say that. And I've always felt it's such a flawed piece of advice because we cannot control what other people say. We cannot control what other people do. So if they say that we can't do something, or that we are not good enough, or blah, 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 we can't control it. So we can't prohibit them from saying anything. We need to be accountable. We need to manage our emotions, and we need to know what to do with ourselves and our minds and our emotions and our behavior when things like that happen. So let's just talk about Man City for a second. Of course, I have a lot of things to say about it, and my feelings were very much volatile, and I felt really, really sad for the girls, and really, it just bothers me when they lose. And like I said before, I've outgrown sort of the era of my life of, you know, being angry either at players, especially obviously only men when this happens. I never get angry at women, but angry at how I feel during the day, or I'm angry or I'm in a bad mood if Arsenal lose or they have just lost a FA Cup final or whatever. Like, it used to affect me more for different reasons. Currently, of course, it still affects me deeply and emotionally, but it affects me because I care about the players. I care about their feelings. I care about their mental well-being and their emotional state. So I can't imagine, even though I can try as be as empathetic as possible, I know that I cannot comprehend the level of, you know, how shit they feel compared to what I might think, right? they feel worse than we do. They feel more disappointed in themselves than we do, and so on and so forth. Like, that is a fact. So if anybody thinks out there that they don't care, or that they, it's just another day for them, or they'll be like, okay, whatever, next, on to the next, that's just not how it works. And I encourage you to open up your eyes and your mind and your heart and be aware that these things are very, very difficult for them to take as well. So bringing in all this hate and all this criticism and all this stuff, it doesn't really do anything positive. And I've spoken about this a million times, and many other podcasts have spoken about this with other squads and other teams and even this team itself. But the reality is that they feel it worse than we do. So when we lose, when Arsenal women lose, I stop thinking about myself. I think immediately of how the players must be feeling and how much it sucks, right? But I still think that there are a lot of positive things to take from that insane match. I truly, truly, truly do, my friends. Like, I know it sounds very sort of far-fetched, or that I'm like grasping at straws here, but I think there's a few really positive things that I want to talk about. The first thing that I'll say is, God damn, is Leah Williamson good at football. She just is. She's unbelievable, the same way that Leah Valti is, that Kim Little is, that Viviana Miedema is, that Steph Catley is, that Katie McCabe. But there's something special about her, her aura, what she means to Arsenal. The true diamond of that club is her. She is the real deal. She is our most prized possession, and as far as I'm concerned. And her vision, her poise, everything about her has been stellar. And historically, of course, this ACL injury poses a lot of challenges for her, but she's come back and she's done really, really well. And I really hope that Jonas manages her properly. But what I will say, among the many things I'll say, is that it's almost like she's too good for us. Not that we don't deserve her or that she would be better off in another team, but I just think that she makes every other defender or center back or central defender look so out of the realm of what Leah Williamson is. You know what I mean? I'm even struggling to vocalize it, because I don't want to insult anybody. Obviously, Amanda Ilestedt is an incredible footballer. Laia Codina, World Cup winner. Lotte Wibben-Moy has gone to many international competitions. Unfortunately, she hasn't had any minutes, but she is a solid defender, right? But to me, Leah is so much better than anybody, with, I would say, Amanda coming in at a close second. But oh my God, is she good? So I'm really, really happy. And I see this as a positive, because we cannot forget that that is the level of people that we need around her. She deserves it, you know? And if she's going to be our franchise player, so to speak, we need to build a team around her. And I don't think that we're doing that at the moment. I think it's a no-brainer that the preferred partnership should be Amanda Ilestedt with Leah Williamson, okay? I don't know what it's going to take for that to happen. I understand that there is a sort of agenda of the club to have Leah and Lotte Wibben-Moy as the sort of long-term future partnership. I particularly don't see that. I've always felt that Lotte is more of a central defensive midfielder, or even a right back, than she's a center back. So that's a hill I'll die on. She's doing really good. She's progressed a lot, but I just much rather see Leah with Amanda. But either way, the things that we have seen Leah do and what we don't see her do, I think it's incredible. I think she is one of the cultural glues of that team. So having her around the training facilities, around the locker room and all that other stuff has to be such a boost of every single thing that you could have. Endorphins, adrenaline, whatever it is, I think that she is such an added value to anything and everything that she does. So it's only a matter of time until she goes back to England, and we need to obviously manage her minutes properly. And I hope that Jonas does that. But I'm just so lucky, and I feel so lucky as a fan and us as a fan base to have her now healthy. The second topic, as it relates to positivity from the match, has to do with Katie McCabe being Katie McCabe. She is the queen of shithousery. She is tenacious. She is paramount to anything that we're going to try to ever do as a team. As long as she's healthy, we need Katie McCabe on that pitch as much as possible. Obviously, health allowing, obviously, squat rotation allowing, and so on and so forth. So we need her on the pitch. And taking her off, which I'll get to at some point, but taking her off immediately grants any team that we could ever face or the Republic of Ireland could ever face, you hand the other team the advantage or a massive advantage. I'm not saying that good things can't happen from other players coming in. No, but by and large, it makes our team weaker than any other team stronger. Same as Beth Mead, same as Viviana Miedema. Hint, hint, you know what I'm going to get at some point. Maybe I will, maybe I won't, but come on. Katie is being outstanding, and I would have never taken her off, but that's a whole different story, again, which hopefully I'll get at the end of this podcast. But the things that she did with Lauren Hemp, the things that she did with Chloe Kelly, like, we need that. We definitely need that. Nobody else was doing it. So welcome back, Katie. I don't know how long you were gone for. I know it's only one match, but it seems like you were gone for 3 months. Another positive for me was Emily Fox. She's been doing really, really well. I enjoy more than her offensive qualities. I'm really enjoying her defensive qualities. And I believe that, I'm not going to say that she's made me forget Noelle, but I haven't been thinking a lot about Noelle. So, man, I think we have a good one. And I'm really, really happy that she seems to have been settled in. But like I said in the previous podcast, I wonder how she feels with the city or in the city. I wonder how she feels with, you know, the culture of Arsenal, being American in the UK, and, you know, all the things that come with the move and all that other stuff. So I'm excited to see hopefully an interview soon, or sort of some sort of recount or recap, or, you know, what are your impressions of the first 3 months being a Gooner and or Gunner or stuff like that. So I'm just very curious, and I hope that happens. And the last thing I'll say, as far as positive goes, even though that it doesn't relate to us directly, I would say that it's how I don't think Man City were that great. Like, I think that we should have beaten them. I don't buy this idea that they are the team to beat Chelsea, especially without Jill Roord. And of course, you're going to say, oh my God, Demian, you're so biased. Yes, I'm biased. Jill Roord is one of my favorite players of all time, not even in Man City or Arsenal, of all time. I love Jill Roord. So any team without her, to me, will look very, very weak. And I wasn't too impressed by City. It's one of the matches where I was just like, ugh, we kind of beat ourselves. Like, we should have taken our chances. This should have happened. This shouldn't have happened. Blah, 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 blah. But as far as like, oh my God, we were beat. We don't deserve to win. We didn't deserve anything out of that game. Like, that wasn't against this particular City team. So why is that a positive? Well, because we need to play them in the league, and they're above us at the moment. So they look beatable. I'm hoping that an Aston Villa, a Liverpool, a Tottenham can take points off them. Man United, of course. So I'm excited to see what happens in the next few fixtures for them. And I'm going to be keeping a close eye, because I didn't think that they would be this sort of average. Of course, I say this, and you have Bunny Shaw, and you have Chloe Kelly, and you have Fowler coming off the bench, and obviously Lauren Hemp. Like, it's absurd. I should probably just shut up. But, you know, one of my favorite players on their team is Alana Kennedy, and the fact that she hadn't played that game, I thought it was like, okay, we got a chance without Alana. And she came back, she kind of closed out the match. But anyway, that's what I would say as far as City goes. Now, what's next for the girls? A little match against London City Lionesses on February 14th, Valentine's Day, on Wednesday. And that match, as you know, should have been played last week, but it's now going to be played this week on Wednesday. one of the good things about the postponement of said match is that now we know who our rivals will be. I don't really always sort of hope for a favorable draw. It's a hard word for me to pronounce. But this one is very favorable. It's very kind. We play Villa at home, I believe. And then we will face either Chelsea or Man City. So one of those will knock each other out. And hopefully we'll be facing them in a final. So if it's City, we can sort of avenge what just happened on Sunday. You know, I think that would be a really cool thing. And then, obviously, if it's Chelsea, we never need any sort of extra motivation against Chelsea. So that would be interesting to see another final. I actually don't even know where the Conti Cup final will be held. I'm really interested. Last year was at Selhurst Park, the home of Crystal Palace, if I'm not mistaken. So I wonder where this one will be. But regardless of the location, I'm expecting us to make it. I know Villa can be a tough opponent. They have amazing players, but they haven't been doing all that well. And I wonder if Rachel Daly is going to be suspended for that match. In case you don't know this, Rachel got a 3-match ban. I don't remember ever hearing of a ban. Oh, maybe, yeah, Lauren James. But anyway, I don't know if Rachel will play against us. And by the way, you know, everybody's talking about this City match, and they're talking about, you know, the ball that crossed the line or didn't cross the line and so on and so forth. And everybody just talking about refs, and it's the most boring, the most basic thing to complain about. I just can't stand it. And the same people that do this, they never ever bring up things that went our way, right? Like I would bet my entire life savings, my family, I would bet the well-being of my niece and nephew, that there's not an ounce of malice in Lotta Woman Moy's body, right? But she elbowed Bunny Shaw, and they should have had a penalty. So it's one of those things. Of course, I don't think she meant it. However, the ref didn't call it, and they deserved that penalty. That did happen. That was a bigger penalty than Stina Shout and others that were talked about. Even that other goal, I thought it was a way clearer penalty against Bunny Shaw than it was a goal crossing or the ball crossing the line. You know what I'm saying? So just we got to put things in perspective, my friends, and we got to, you know, be as objective as we can in some areas. And coming from me, that's really rich, Mr. Subjectivity, but we need to remember these things. So like, if you're complaining about that and you think that's why we lost the game, I'm here to kindly tell you that you're kind of wrong, and that's not exactly what happened or close to being the reason why we lost that match. And we also need to understand that, you know, refs, and Siobhan mentioned this yesterday on her show, refs in the league, or maybe even the Conti Cup and stuff like that, they're not even full-time refs. So they might not get the same training. There's not the same budget for the matches and finances related to, as it relates to, you know, the grounds having VAR and all the support that they would need. But like, I think we could do a better job if not attacking the refs, at least being like, you know what, these things, I wouldn't say they even out, because like, it's just like injustice paid through injustice and stuff like that. That's not the greatest way to look at in the world, I don't think. But the fact of the matter is that they could have had that penalty and it didn't happen. And there were a couple other things. I think I want to say an offside. I think it was Lauren Hemp that was called offside when she wasn't. Maybe it was Chloe, I don't remember. But anyway, these are things to keep in mind, and I'm changing the topics. But let's talk about Jonas. I think you would have to be somewhat in denial to not have opinions, strong opinions about Jonas. Right? I certainly have strong opinions about not his role or his job or his ability. I question certain things because I am ignorant, and because I don't get these things explained to me properly, all I am left with are two of the most dangerous things that anybody can have, which are assumptions and expectations that are sort of tied to those assumptions. And neither of those things are the most constructive for me as a fan at the moment, or somebody that has a blog and a podcast that tries to stay in the most sort of positive side of things. So I'm struggling at the moment. I have to be completely honest with you. There is a lack of trophies. I don't necessarily see any sort of progress. And this is nothing to do with Jonas. Nothing to do with him. What I'm about to say has nothing to do with him. I have always questioned why managers get renewals so early in their tenure when they haven't really done anything, based on trophies, and it's all based on potential and idea and almosts. We can talk about, forget about Jonas Idevo. Think about other teams in world football. I'll never comprehend, you know. I think it's a meritocracy situation. You have to earn it. You have to, do that. But it's easy from the outside. I don't know what he's done from the inside. I don't know the impact that he's had on these players mentally, emotionally, and so on and so forth. So obviously from a footballing perspective, I don't know that. So I might be completely wrong, but at the moment, with the poor results and some decisions that I question, makes me question a bit if he is the right person for the job. For instance, at the game against West Ham United, he took Viviana Miedema, Beth Mead off at the same time, right? That makes no sense to me at all. In the game against Man City, if there were two players, I'll throw Beth in there. But if I have to focus on two players for the sake of this argument, if there are two players that I thought were given their all and what we needed the most at that time, were definitely Alessia Russo and Katie McCabe. Like I said previously, instantly, when you deplete your squad from a person, not only a player, a person like Katie McCabe, you're handing the advantage to a team. So for me, if you have the one player that is bites your ankles and just kicks you and pinches you and throws you off your game mentally and tries to rattle you and is running into your players, right? If you take that off, you don't have anybody off the bench that does that. Nobody is tougher than Katie McCabe. So in a game where I thought, if we weren't going to get the edge from a footballing perspective, maybe mentally we could have done something. We could have rattled them a little bit more. You're like waving a white flag. And that to me was lame, to be completely honest with you. And I don't know. And then Alessia, I thought that, I still believe that she's better suited as a little bit deeper than an out and out number nine, maybe just having to do with other things. I think that the wing players are a little bit hesitant. I don't think that we should start Caitlin Ford all the time. So this is another thing where I sort of have my reservations with Jonas. Like, I don't see Caitlin as being the player that a lot of people in the fan base think she is, even though she obviously scores goals here and there and has had important goals for us. I'd much rather see Chloe Lacasse. I don't know what else this girl has to do to score. She has proven she has talent, ability, drive. All she does is think about going forward. I love that about her. So we need to play her more, Also, Jonas went on a press conference and talked about the limited minutes that Kira Cooney-Cross was getting, for example. And she mentioned how much he rated her and that she was a player that was very effective against low-blocking teams, right? Well, a low-blocking team was played against in West Ham United, and he didn't play her. He played her for a few minutes. That made no sense to me. Like, if that's the player, it's like saying, like, well, I need this one tool for this job, but I'm just not going to use it. I'm going to try every other tool until the tool that I know that works, I'm just not going to use it. That is a thing that I struggle with understanding. I'm not arrogant enough to know that I know better. I just wish that I would have lunch or dinner and these things would be explained to me, right? That does not mean that I think that I'm owed an explanation. And it definitely doesn't mean that I think that I know what should be done, right? I would like to see certain things. I would like to see Steph Catley as left back and Katie McCabe up top or on the wing instead of Kaylin Ford, right? I would also love to see Chloe Lacasse from time to time if we're going to give Steph a break. I would love to see somebody coming on the right wing for a Beth Mead. I don't know who that person might be, right? I would love to try other players in that position. I know Chloe can play there as well, you know what I'm saying, and give Beth a break. I want to see what Viviana Miedema's role is. I want to know if how much we let her play as a number 10 or in the midfield. How much do we want her to go back to her, you know, outstanding role as a number 9? What do we need? What's best for us? What does she want? And I would give her the keys to the kingdom as well. So it's like, Viv, whatever you want. If you want to play goalie, fine. Like, whatever you want, we'll accommodate you. So I think that we are in a position where we have among the best squads in world football, and the manager isn't getting the best out of the team yet. I don't know if it's a tactical thing. I don't understand. Obviously, there are some injuries, right? But you cannot tell me that you are not going to play, aka play other players than Kim Little, Leah Valti, Viviana Miedema, Beth Mead, Katie McCabe, Alessia Russo. Like, what the actual F, right? I get that Kira Cooney Cross is a player for the future. I get that Victoria Pelova has impressed a lot of you out there and that she has had a lot of assists and so on and so forth. She is not, and they are not, Kim Little and Leah Valti. They are not. They're never going to be them because that's just not the kind of players they are. They're stellar players. They're going to be incredible, unbelievable players. But when I say that they're not them, by the way, I'm not saying that they don't have the ability that they have. What I'm saying is that whatever Leah and Valti have together, that is a much better thing than anything that Kira and Victoria can do with only one of Leah Valti or Kim Little, right? So they need to be fit. We need to figure out how to keep them fit as much as possible. Obviously, all of this implies squad rotation and all these other things. So there was a press conference a few months ago where he talked about, like, some were starters and some were finishers. You know, why would we ever see, you know, starter players as anything less or the opposite? You know, subs as anything else as starters. Well, if you play them in the 75th minute and you expect them, five of them to come in at the same time, four of them, three of them to come in and shock the entire, your own team, right? If you shock the team and the continuity that you might have built, right? Then yeah, I expect people to not be happy with that, myself included. So again, I've said this many times. I'm going to say one last time. And I'm going to promise you right now that it's going to be the last time I say it. The idea that Steph Catley and Kaitlyn Ford have this telepathic understanding that cannot be touched under any circumstance is fallacy. They're amazing players, world-class players, especially Steph Catley. Steph is one of my favorite players in the history of the game. I love that woman. I want to see her thrive. I believe, me, the musician guy, the guy that doesn't know anything about football, I believe that she would be way better suited with Katie McCabe on the left wing, right? Because Katie has the ability to play anywhere on the pitch. I've said this before. Katie should play in midfield. She should play as a number 10. She can play left back, right back, center back. She can play anywhere. I mean, that, by the way, that partnership in the back of Katie McCabe and Leah Williamson, are you kidding me? Like, I'm amazed that we haven't tried that, right? We need to do that. I think that would be cool. I don't know if Katie would like it, but I could see that happening the same way that I saw us using Kim as a number 10 when Viv was injured. I thought that there was an opportunity for that. So I don't know. The way that they're playing, it doesn't seem like they're too confident as far as the instructions, or maybe they're not confident in the manager. I have no idea what it is. Confidence is something that is sort of, in a way, harvested through success and wins and stuff like that, usually, for the normal people, right? normal people have mentality blocks, or they struggle with other things. Not to say that footballers don't struggle with mentality issues and stuff like that, but I truly believe that what's happening right now is not the players. I believe it. And this is not a dig at the manager or the club or the board. What I'm telling you is what I feel. And I've seen the players feel more astute and more cutthroat and more, you know, cohesive from a footballing perspective. And I blame it, if blame is the right word, on the coach, like that, the manager. That is who has to, it sort of starts from the top. So with that said, again, I understand that there is a process. I understand that there's a lot of things that need to happen. I hope that among the things that happen is success, it's winning, and also for us to be aware that we cannot, as Arsenal Football Club, have another season with no trophies. That is absolutely unacceptable when you have among the greatest players to ever play in that squad. It's just unacceptable. And I don't care if it's a manager that has to be removed or an assistant coach that has to be removed or whatever it is, but these players deserve to be winning everything possible. And I am not convinced that they are being set up to do that. However, with all of that said, with all the sort of passive criticism that I have towards Jonas, there's one thing that I'll say. Based on what I see, what I feel, what I hear from the manager as well, I definitely believe that we are still in it. We are still in the WSL. We still have a shot. The girls definitely have an ability to win the title. They have an ability to turn the season around. This all doom and gloom situation, I do not buy. These are proven winners, World Cup finalists, Euro Cup winners. There's no way in hell that you can convince me that a Leah Valti is not up for the rest of the season. There's no way you can convince me that a player like Amanda Ilisted doesn't want to win every single trophy in front of her. And that there's no way you can tell me that all of the players collectively in that team do not believe that they can win the WSL. There's no way. I know this. I can feel it with every fiber in my being. And I encourage you to think about it that way as well. These are winners. These are historic women. These are players that are professional, ethically, morally. All they want to do is win to provide the fans, you know, with the love that we in turn give them without a shadow of a doubt. These are women that also want to get ahead in their careers and continue to be trailblazers. So trophies are what they live for. They're going to want to do that. And the WSL being the one that we haven't won in a few years, I think that we're still in it. I thoroughly believe so. And I'll tell you this, in case you haven't seen this or you haven't sort of looked ahead or read my blog, but I mentioned how on Friday, right, this Friday, February 16th, Man City play against Chelsea. Why does that matter, right? Because if Chelsea are beaten by Man City, right, they will be leveled on 34 points, which means if we win our next match, we will be 3 points behind them, right? We would be on 31 points. They will all be in 34 points, right? And we still have to play both of those teams. So there is a chance. There is a shot. There's always hope. Mathematically, we're still in it. And I get it that there haven't been any team that have won with more than two losses. And I don't care about that. I don't care. Like, what's the point of watching a sport if all you think about is the past and the omens and, you know, all this? What is the point? God damn it, that makes me so annoyed when people say, like, they imply that things are just written in the stars and that's just the way that the cookie crumbles, right? Like, I have a problem with that. I really have a problem with that because I believe that we, as a fan base, we need to support the players for real and we need to be as positive and optimistic as possible. And if we do that, and we also vocalize that support and that positivity and that optimism, there's no way that that's not going to affect them positively, right? In turn, if all you do is complain and you bring out negatives only, that it's just not going to happen. If you tell them, if you, the players read that the fan base collectively thinks that the title is gone, the pundits can say whatever the hell they want, right? We need to just be the bed for which for them to lay on and dream the dreams of winning it. We need to be supportive for them as much as possible. And I don't think, from what I read, we're just not doing a good job. So if you think that this is only the players and you only look at the players for how the club is doing, let me tell you, we need to look at ourselves as fans as well, collectively. What are we doing? That's all I got for you today, my friends. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your energy, for your time. As always, a kind reminder, thatarsenalwomenblog.com. Again, that's thatarsenalwomenblog.com. I write every single day. Every single day. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk again real soon.